Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Today's show is on the collapse of the American education system and academic freedom in America today. We're joined today by Suffolk County Community College political science professor Nicholas Giordino, as today is going to be part one of a two-part series. Today we'll discuss the collapse of the American education system, and then next week on part two, we'll discuss the ideological intolerance on college campuses. I'd like to welcome back into the studio Professor Giordino. How are you, sir?
Hi, Chauncey. How are you? Glad to be with you.
Thank you so much. I know that we have a lot to unpack this evening in a 25-minute period. If you can you just lay the groundwork, if you will, of how we got to the collapse of the American education system, basically a little brief background on the beginning of the educational system and how it led it up to this point now.
Sure. One of the main factors was that you had state and local control over education. And starting in about the 1970s, really 1979, with the Department of Education being created as a cabinet-level position, you started to see more and more federal encroachment into the education system, trying to take power away from the state and local governments. At the same time, you also started to see a change in the teachers, where schools were hiring more administrators than they were faculty members. And finally, when you look at it, technology has also changed the way education is taking place, and the idea of the multicultural approach. So in the 1990s, you moved away from teaching American government and civics, and you moved more towards a multicultural approach, thinking that Americans would naturally get an education in American government because they live here. That's not been the case.
Hence, we have the Alexandria Ocasio's in Congress today as a result.
Correct. And what's happened is that we're not really teaching students anymore. So if you look at the numbers, the Department of Education has what's called the National Report Card. It's the largest ongoing assessment of what students know and what students can do. And every year they look at third or fourth grade, eighth grade, and graduating seniors. And I look at the graduating seniors number because those are the students I'm getting in. And the numbers are horrific. If we look at every single subject, they hover between a 15% proficiency rating to a 25% proficiency rating. So, for example, you have American government and civics. Only 22% of graduating seniors are proficient in American government and civics. 23% are proficient in doing math at the college level when they enter college. You have 35 being the highest percentage in reading, 22 in writing, 22 in science. 11% are proficient in American history. Only 11% of students are proficient in American history. And these are graduating seniors. And so this has been a catastrophic failure that nobody wants to talk about.
You know, it's very, very interesting because even when I think about when I went to school in the 60s, when I went to grammar school in the 60s, that was one of the biggest foundations of me going to grammar school was about American history. That was one of the biggest things that we covered. And it's ironic that they're taking that out of the educational system today. And then this is why we have the left, or we have, people's ideology is really based on, I don't even know what it's based on nothing, no factual basis.
Exactly.
And we're going to be in trouble. You're right. If we don't really address this issue of, I can't even understand why we're not trying to educate our children to, you know, to help advance our government and to take over the government, you know, to hand it down. What do you think at this time our college campuses are preparing our children for?
Well, when we're looking at it, it's actually mind-boggling with the American government, because if you think
right.
about it, out of all the subjects out there, out of every single subject, there's nothing more important than government, because government affects every single profession. You have to get licensed. You have to deal with government. If you want to open up a business, you have to deal with government. You want to take out student loans, mm-hmm. you have to deal with government. You work on a house, or you want to expand your home, you deal with government. You want to drive a car, you deal with government. And yet we don't teach government. So in 10th grade math, I learned about binomials and trinomials, and I had trouble with that, but I've gotten pretty good with my life. I ended up in a good place, and I still have yet to encounter a binomial or trinomial, yet I encounter government every single day. So we're not teaching the students the basic functions of government, the roles and responsibilities, why did the Founding Fathers set it up the way they intended to. And these students are basically strangers living in the United States, and that's why they don't have an appreciation for the United States, because they don't know it. They don't understand it. And all they do is hear sound bites, and that's what they talk about. You know, the fact that all the Founding Fathers were slave owners. Meanwhile, it was only two-thirds of the Founding Fathers that didn't have slaves. One-third did. That slavery was heavily debated at the start of this country. And many of the Founding Fathers pointed out how morally unjust slavery was, how it was an evil that was going to haunt us, and they were correct.
Yes, it was. And it's unfortunate that psychologically some of us are still suffering from that today. So we have a real big push. This problem is bigger than I thought, because now the only highest level is at 35%, and that is at a reading proficiency level. 22% at an English 22% at an English proficiency level, and 11% of understanding the history of government. That's really sad. So what are we preparing our children for? It's like almost like we're programming them for what? Because I know that from my experience in education, as being a former board member in Patterson, you know, we're teaching kids to test, and that's it. And I don't know how. Go ahead,
that's
professor.
The scary part. That's the scary part, is that the students of today are getting more education than any generation prior to them. They have more information at their fingertips than any generation prior to them. Yet they know less than those of the 50s and the 60s that dropped out of school in the 8th, 9th, or 10th grade and didn't even get a high school diploma. The students of today know less. And it's because the education system, as I continually say, has fundamentally collapsed. Now, it's not all government's fault that it collapsed. Part of it's our fault, our society, our culture has changed, where parents want to be the kids' best friends, where parents push the extracurricular activities, the sports and stuff, more than they do the academic side of it. We don't teach kids, and we don't push kids to learn life skills like saving and investing, or carpentry, or electrical work, or plumbing. And that's a big problem. We need to rethink how we do education in the United States.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, just as I'm listening to you talk about hands-on work, I remember when we had woodshop in school and art in school, and they removed both of those out of the public education system in Patterson. Art and crafts and music. It's you're right. It's really, really a shame. Yet the bloatedness of the administrative staff and high salaries and political contracts, it makes, I don't even know if we need a federal education system. I think it should maybe be considered to be turned back over to the states. I don't know if we need a federal.
you know, I would say it needs to be turned back over to the states, but then you look at people like Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, and you may want to rethink that. What I think needs to happen is that we need to start developing sound curriculums. You know, in fifth grade, why aren't the students learning how to use the internet effectively? That's what they should be being taught, you know, the dangers of social media. They should start at a young age. By the eighth grade, before they get their first part-time job, they should be learning about saving and investing and the idea of compound interest. And, you know, those are things that they could use for the rest of their lives. If you look at, you said wood shop. I mean, I had wood shop and home economics. So I
exactly.
could sew buttons on my shirts. I know how to
exactly.
sew a hole. I'm not great sewer,
exactly.
but I can do it. It made me confident
exactly.
to do things myself.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're right. And, you know, home economics, learned how to cook, you know, all of these things, you know, there's no more critical thinking skills. But even just basically home economics, just basically how to live independently, you know. And what I realized, because as probably as well as you, I didn't grow up with technology. We didn't have technology. So I realized that I had to learn how to gather and assess and get information, you know. And so because I had to do that, I understand how to use technology to find information. It's just ironic when you stated that children are afforded more information today, but no less.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you put any kid in a library today, they won't know how to use the Dewey Decimal System. They'll have to ask the librarian to find the book for them. And it's actually scary because we're making our kids less competent and less ready for the real world when we look at it. And unfortunately, technology has also had a negative impact. First of all, you have all these tech giants that are feeding the schools this technology. They'll give it to the schools for free in order to get the kids addicted to their technology. But more importantly, so technology emerged when I was in my college years, and the iPhone still wasn't out. I mean, you know, you had the old Motorola flip phones. I think the StarTech.
Exactly.
But when you're looking at it, in today's day and age, everyone's got a phone. And these kids, if they do read, their phone's right next to them, buzzing every 2 seconds because they're getting an update on Facebook or they're getting a text message. And so they're not really reading or retaining information. They're just looking at words on a page. And all the studies are showing that the technology has had a negative impact on our lives. Unfortunately, the cat's out of the bag. It's not like you could just walk away from the technology and make it like it never existed before.
You're absolutely correct. And we do have to rethink how we prepare our students to compete, even for survival skills. Forget about competing globally. You know, like you said, our kids don't even know basic skills, just understand basic forms of government. You know, it's a shame.
I can tell you, 4 in 10 students today cannot pass a basic citizenship exam.
You're probably right. And you know, if you ask some of these students who's the president of various countries or who serves as a cabinet member in the government, they probably wouldn't even know who the council person is or state senators.
No, in fact, many of them don't realize that we have two levels of government with this system of federalism, where we have our federal government that's empowered with certain things, and then we have state governments that are empowered with other things. And that it's actually state and local governments that affect us more than the federal government. And yet they think that, you know, it's just the federal government, that's it. They don't understand that we have, you know, legislative houses on the federal and state levels. They're clueless about it. Indiana is doing something right, though. What Indiana did, in order to get a high school diploma, you have to be able to pass the civics exam. So that's a start in the right direction. Hopefully other states will mirror what Indiana's doing with that.
For those that are tuning in, you're listening to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We're very happy to have in the studio political science professor from Suffolk County Community College, Professor Nicholas Gordino. And we're talking about the collapse of the American educational system, academic freedom, and next week, part two, is going to be the ideological intolerance of college campuses. Professor, so what do we need to do? Because apparently, by what you're talking about, this is going to take a grassroots effort for us to engage in possibly some policy changes in education on the state level and on the local level.
Well,
is that one avenue that we could do? Yes.
It's certainly one avenue. And as far as state and local governments, they should be changing the curriculums dramatically. As I said before, they should bring in more life skills into the curriculums. But at the same time, they should also, I'm not a big fan of the superintendents that are making the same exact amount of money as the president of the United States. Okay, the reality is that public servants choose the job because they want to benefit the society. So they take a lower paying job because they understand that they're dedicated to our communities. And so I think we need to look at the administrative staff to faculty ratio, because as of right now, 55% of personnel in schools is non-faculty. You have more non-faculty personnel in schools than you do actual teachers. I think that we need to start making sure that there are stricter standards to become certified to teach. That we have made it too easy where, basically you pass four tests, in New York at least, and you could become a teacher. Anyone can pass the test. It doesn't mean they could teach a class. So I think there are things on the government side we could do, but also we have to take our own responsibility. And I call on every parent out there to get more engaged in their child's life, to stop trying to be your child's friend, that your child isn't always right, that sometimes it's not the teacher's fault, because we've had a major cultural shift in our society where it used to be that if a student failed the test, it was that student's fault. Now, the parent will call the school, they'll complain about the teacher, and the administration will change the grades. So parents need to start being accountable for their children, stop being their friend, start being a parent, sit with them, do homework with them. And I know it's, after a long day of work, it's difficult. Okay, let's face it, the family structure has changed. You have 40% in single-parent households, parents working all day, even in two-parent households. Both parents may work all day. They come home, they have to cook, take care of the kids, clean up, maybe baths or showers, and then to sit and do homework, it may seem like a lot, but that's the role of being a parent. It's hard. It's not easy. And so parents have to get re-engaged. I think that we need to spark curiosity in the minds of the youth. I think we're trying to program them to take tests, and we're not making them inquisitive enough to ask questions, to think critically for themselves. Instead, they just believe whatever they hear. And so it's a cultural challenge as well as a governmental challenge.
Well said. That is very well said. Our children need to get more engaged with critical thinking, life skills, survival skills, basically learn how to live independently on our own. Technology has made a lot of people dependent, where it lacks their ability to want to research and look for information. And like you said, they have more information at their fingertips, yet it's not getting to them. But one other interesting point that you brought up is about the parent-student tie-in. The challenges today in our society with a faster pace, like you said, two parents, single parent homes working with responsibility, it's hard. To get their homework done. I was very fortunate that my ex-wife and I, we were able to do it. But yes, it is a commitment. And I guess we're going to have to look at ways too, with those who can't, who are not able to do it, try to put some more after school programs maybe in place as well to try to help with the students. So basically, you've really laid out a framework of basically what we should do is hire more teachers, put in stricter testing for certifications, reduce the level of administrative staff, and engage with more teacher engagement with students. It's ironic that we're talking about this today because the local superintendent, you can graduate with a passing grade of 60%, and she received a bonus for $19,000. This is not the private sector. Why are superintendents, as you said, making more money than the President of the United States? Why are they getting bonuses when that's taxpayers' money that could be going back to the classroom? And even in cities like North Patterson, Jersey City, you still have teachers, and I don't mean to cut you off, Professor, still buying supplies out of their own pockets. I mean, the corruption educational system is really at the forefront of our society, and it's a shame. And like you said, partly because of the shift of it going to the federal side from the 1970s. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, two things that you said that really raised red flags. First of all, you're absolutely right. No superintendent should be getting any bonuses, period. It's a civil servant job, and therefore bonuses should not be allowed. But the second thing you said is even more important. You said 60% in order to pass. You have to have 60%. Would you want to see a heart doctor that only knew 60% about the heart? You know, when we look at that number, is 60% really passing, where you only know 60% of the material? And I think that's a big part of the problem, that we've dumbed down the standards so much that we're willing to accept that, you know, if you only know a little bit over half of the information, that's passing.
Yeah, it's a shame that the public education today has really been used as a political football for political parties on both sides of the aisle. I see it more so on the left with their policies that they've enacted and how they dole out contracts and how different people get various positions. And it's not about education anymore. And it's becoming more apparent by, you know, how our children are not being able to function, as you talked about, with 11%, 22%, 35% with these lower deficiencies entering into college. They can't even compete with the kids around the country from India, from China, from Germany, from Europe. Our kids can't compete. And that's how come we even look at those other kids from outside that come into our country, that do come into our public education system, excel because they've already had the foundation of discipline within an educational framework, which that's another thing that's lacked here is discipline, discipline and reinforcement.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
you know, listen, I understand that teachers, especially in urban cities, have a tremendous challenge in trying to educate children that come to school with a ton of challenges. I understand it, lived it, I see it, you know, but the teachers don't get that support. You know, like you
no,
said,
they
you
don't.
Have
I mean, you have situations today where teachers will literally get hit or knocked out by a student, and that student can't be suspended or expelled. There is no discipline. So if I'm a teacher and I'm seeing the administrative staff basically say, you can hit any of our teachers, don't worry about it, you're not going to get in trouble, how much dedication can I possibly have in that school?
Yeah, there's a lot of areas that we have to look at when we talk about the collapse of the educational system in America. In addition to us talking about the collapse, the national educational budget is larger than the military budget.
And well, if you look at it and combine all 50 states, we spend over $1 trillion a year in education, over $1 trillion. That's more than almost every single country combined on education. Yet we rank 30th in the world, in the developed world, when it comes to student performance.
And the sad part is that the children do not benefit from this. Unfortunately, politics have dominated political parties, political patrons, jobs, contracts, and it's really, really sad. But I hope that, you know, we have more parents that get involved, raise the level of consciousness, challenge the status quo, demand, you know, more discipline in our schools, and hopefully we'll be able to see a change. Professor, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. Please share any information that you can with our listeners for if they would like to get in contact with you, how they can reach out to you, please.
Well, they go to my website, thepasreport.com, pasreport.com. They could go and listen to the podcast. It's on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. So all you have to do is type in the PAS Report there. I'm on Facebook. They can find me on Twitter at PAS Report. So if you want to know about anything about me, just type in PAS Report, the PAS Report, and I'll come up.
I want to thank you again, Professor, for coming on the show, talking about the collapse of the American educational system with my listeners. As a matter of fact, Professor Nicholas Giordino will be joining us again on the 24th next Monday, and he's going to be talking about the ideological intolerance on college campuses. That'll be part two. Also, I will be in the studio on the 21st. I will be having a political strategist and doctoral educational student, Mr. Mallory Earle, on my show on the 21st at 1 o'clock, how members of the U.S. Senate and Congress profited from private prison industries. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in today to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. You can follow me at Right Talk Host on Twitter or Right Talk Radio Host on Facebook. Also, U.S. National Politics 101 on Facebook and U.S. Politics Today. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Professor Nicholas Giordano, for giving us some insight on the history of American education in a system that is in collapse, what we need to do to hopefully change the dynamic for our children in the future. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. I want to thank the President of the United States. Thank all of the people in America and our listeners. God bless America. God bless you all. And have a good night until next time.